everyone. Thanks for tuning in to Behind the Review, a behind-the-scenes look at the journalistic work of our amazing team here at the Review of Journalism. So at the Review, we aim to tell stories that mirror the widespread and rapid changes happening within the Canadian journalism industry. And so this podcast series will serve as a deep dive into the reporting process of our hardworking contributors, shedding light on why it's important to tell these stories now. Today, I'm joined by Matthew Hanick, who is going to be talking about his piece on the polarization of LGBTQ plus representation in the media landscape, and how after working in a predominantly conservative space as a queer journalist, he began that process of finding or rediscovering his voice. And so hi, Matthew, how are you doing today?
Good, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, of course. I'm glad. I'm glad that I got the chance to speak with you. So I just want to start by saying that your piece was an incredibly good read, and I particularly love your ability to paint a scene so vividly, much like you would read in a novel. So you are definitely at that level. Just let me say that. And not just your own experiences, but also the experiences of other important figures in your story, like that little kind of segment of about Tim McCaskill, for instance. Well done, really.
Thank you for thinking that.
So as a queer person in journalism, what was your understanding of LGBTQ plus representation before writing this feature? And what did you learn coming away from this experience?
I guess my understanding of queer representation in media was that it's steadily improved over the last couple of years. I think we've seen like social movements like Black Lives Matter, you know, sort of fight for representation in media. And, you know, there's been sort of a shift in seeking and asking for diversity in media. And so I think we definitely see that nowadays. And there's been some, you know, small improvements here and there.
Absolutely.
Hopefully that answers the question.
Absolutely, it does. No, I think that like anyone kind of like with like kind of just entering that situation would have more or less that idea, because, you know, in the grand scheme of things, we look at it from that standpoint of like how it must have changed on a wider scale. But like, I guess if you're not from like a marginalized group within, you know, the queer community, you can't really like speak to that. But so this was probably an education in itself. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, your idea for the story came from your experience interning at the National Post as a queer journalist. And can you speak a little bit on what the work atmosphere was like there?
It was pleasant. I worked there as an editorial intern. I reported to the web team. I was interested in the National Post because they offered specifically an editorial internship, and I wanted to write news. And so that's what I did. And I enjoyed doing it. And so I wrote a lot of stories for them. And yeah, it was going well. And, you know, they valued my ideas.
No, I absolutely. And that's kind of heartening to hear that, like, you know, in an atmosphere where you might like anticipate that, you know, people have like opposing viewpoints, that they still like maintain that level of like professionalism, and it's still welcoming. But also you in your piece, you talk about how working at the Post, despite like, you know, them making you feel like valued and all that as a journalist, working there placed you in a bit of a moral quandary. And can you explain what that was and like how that made you feel?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I accepted this position, I had certain, you know, reservations about the publication, you know, given its conservative outlook and its audience, not to mention some frequent contributors who I disagree with. Conservative media is often critical of the LGBTQ plus community, and in recent years, extremely so. I'm thinking specifically of like accusations of grooming, pedophilia, and, you know, with polarization and distrust in media you see on social media, these things go to sort of wild extremes. Nonetheless, I considered working at the National Post a good opportunity career-wise. And if anything, I thought about the opportunity as one where I could potentially write about sensitive topics in a responsible way, being a queer person in a conservative environment. In practice, I don't know if that's what actually happened. And that's sort of where, you know, the moral conundrum comes in. I sort of got lost in the weeds a little bit, and I didn't have so much control. I didn't have as much control as I thought. And so, yeah, I started to lose my voice a little bit.
Yeah. So on that note, can you talk us through your story a bit, and what did you set to find out from that experience?
Right. So I guess with this essay, I wanted to sort of talk about, so specifically, you know, Canada's LGBTQ rights invisibility are sort of on the downswing, I guess, is the end result of all this polarization. And conservatives sort of view that as the result of, you know, radical political thinking. And so there's this sort of two ends of the spectrum where everyone is in and of themselves acting too radical. But when it comes to the queer community, I wanted to look back at, you know, Canada's early gay liberation movement and sort of ask what the history was there, and, you know, what its achievements, how those achievements were achieved, basically. And was it, what style of politics was it accomplished through? Was it radical or was it assimilationist? For the most part, it was, I guess it was a mixture of both.
Yeah, but there's definitely, you can like see that divide, that generational divide between like how the older generations there, like, as you're saying, just kind of like they're more so about like celebrating their hard earned like achievements and, you know, assimilating, so to speak. While with the newer generation, there's still like this, I think this fervent need to like, how should I say, like resort to like more radical demonstrations, because like, you know, without trying to like sound Shakespearean here, like, oh, like the battle is not yet won, you know, until every kind of like sect of like within the LGBTQ community is seen and recognized.
Well, I can say this, the essay, you know, sort of came from attending my first Pride parade and it being interrupted by the Coalition Against Pinkwashing, who were, I guess, protesting Pride's sponsors relationships to Israeli arms manufacturers, and conservatives called this protest radical. I guess being a queer person working in a conservative space, I sort of wanted to interrogate both left and right-wing perspectives to understand why the LGBTQ plus community is sort of so fractured right now. Is radical politics a bad thing?
So in the process of like gathering voices or gathering sources for this piece, there were evidently some conflicting perspectives, because, you know, you're kind of like trying to balance it out from like the right and the left side. So yeah, there were some conflicting perspectives that you included in your piece here. And how did you go about balancing these voices?
Well, I suppose the essay started out as trying to unravel the conundrum that is being a queer conservative. Not a queer conservative, but I just was interested in this sort of perspective, people who sort of are assimilationists, but don't recognize or are against, you know, the sort of radicalism that we see today with the queer social movement or factions of it. I was just interested in getting their perspective and sort of balancing it out, you know, with more left wings and sort of, you know, looking at, you know, just trying to find a middle ground, basically. It was also easier just because I had worked at the National Post, mm-hmm. and I could find conservative queer and lesbian journalists to talk to. So it was just doable. And then I did want to go back through, I guess, Canada's gay liberation history. And that's where I sort of reached out to the Body Politic, Tim McCaskill, Ed Jackson, I spoke with. And then trying to find people to talk to on the left, it wasn't in today's media landscape, it wasn't easy. I tried to reach out to a few unions, BLMTO, journalists at Extra. It's hard. In their defense, I did just work at the National Post, and so I didn't really get much in response, but I did my best, so.
And does that, like, fear kind of still loom over your head, like, being associated with, like, the kind of core values of the National Post?
Very much, yeah.
Oh, well, I think anyone who reads this piece will see that that's just simply not the case. So just for your own assurance.
Thank you.
But yeah, on that note, being a more left-leaning queer person, when speaking to some of your more conservative sources, were there any stories or perspective of theirs that made you stop and think or even resonated with you?
I guess speaking with all like the sources, but I think conservative journalists is the idea that assimilation is sort of the way to go, and that, you know, rather than wait for a sort of radical overhaul of society, we should trust basically all of our institutions, even if inclusion for some marginalized groups comes at an incremental pace. Mm-hmm. I think it's easier said for some than others, but throughout, I guess, gay liberation history, they did at some point realize that there would be no revolution, as sad as it is to say, and that work through unions and work through the courts. I think Tim McCaskill calls it like a vertical approach, like working with government and working through laws is how societal acceptance happens. I think that is sort of how it has become. But part of the essay also acknowledges that since not everyone can assimilate or assimilation isn't offered to certain members, and specifically like racialized and trans queer people, then why should they have to wait around? Why isn't radical politics a suitable option?
So I realize that for this piece, you likely had to do extensive research into the history of the movement's visibility in Canadian media spaces. What were some of the things that shocked you to learn? And do you see any parallels into how the queer community are represented in the media now?
I guess to answer the first half of that question, I guess I was more or less surprised. I don't know why I was surprised, but like to see like the Toronto Star and the Globe and Mail like so anti-gay was surprising, just because, you know, of how the tides have changed, I'll say. And then I guess to answer the second half, I guess conservative stances are the same as always. I guess I don't think the National Post was around till the 80s, but like the Sun was pretty much the same as it is today. So
some things certainly haven't changed. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, you know what? This is kind of like an offshoot of that. But can you speak a little bit on what it was like getting to kind of like talk to Tim McCaskill and learning about the history of representation in Canadian media?
Sure. It was really cool to talk to Tim McCaskill because I learned about him, I guess, during my undergrad as an English major, also at TMU. My professor recommended his book, Queer Progress. I can't remember for what assignment, but I read it quite some time ago, and I didn't realize, like, as a journalist, or at least at the time, that I would end up being able to speak with him. I think that's maybe the coolest part about this experience was, you know, getting to speak with an activist who really, you know, shaped Toronto's queer history, and also Ed Jackson, also of the Body Politic, and seeing and just, I guess, reading about the uphill battle they faced, because there really was no queer media in the 70s. Before them, and they did a lot of work, you know, not only to make queerness acceptable, but broadcast to all. So really cool.
I'm glad that you got to have that experience. That must be some part of you like must have like had to kind of like remember like to kind of keep up your not journalistic persona, but like remembering that you're like you're here for like an interview, but well, like at the same time not being like not totally succumbing to being like starstruck or awestruck, like what, like anyway. So on that note, with the rise of, you know, the media landscape has changed. I mean, maybe not entirely for the better, but there has been some progress. And with mainstream media becoming more inclusive, do you think queer communities still have a need for, like, independent radical media spaces?
Absolutely. Like, if you look at how trans issues are covered, you know, the lack of trans journalists in major newsrooms has essentially botched the coverage of that issue. And that's why I think independent journalism and independent queer journalism from trans and non-binary folks in Canada is so essential to, I guess, actively counteract like misinformation, but also just poor information coming from news outlets. And that's just one example.
So just kind of taking it back to like, you know, what this piece meant for you, what has reporting and writing this feature meant for you personally? How has it changed or has it changed you, how you feel about your path in journalism since you finished interning at the National Post?
Definitely. I sort of feel like I needed to do this after working there. Again, it was a pleasant experience, but I feel like I sort of misrepresented myself and I kind of lost my voice a little bit. And so this was my path to finding it again. Throughout this year, I've had people think that I'm conservative or, and so just this, I've sort of felt this stigma followed me. And so I don't know, that really bothered me. And I think I didn't want that to be a representation of, you know, my journalistic standards and ethics. So this is me, I guess, trying to break free of that.
Well, I think just being one of the people who've read your amazing piece, I think it's safe to say you've done just that. And I can't wait for others to read it as well. It really is a great piece. And it seems that you had a good time, not without its struggles reporting on this, surely, because I'm sure you experienced some roadblocks and like, you know, gathering sources, but it was, I take it was a very like fulfilling experience nonetheless, and like a passion project.
Yeah, definitely. It's been a weird year, but I'm happy with this essay.
So, Matthew, just to end things off, having been through it all, would you say it's possible to be queer and work in a conservative media space?
I think what I learned through writing this essay is that anyone can be conservative. This sort of started out as an essay on white privilege, examining like how the queer liberation movement in Canada primarily validates the sort of white cisgender middle class. And that is sort of the argument I bring to the table for the most part, because it does. But what I did learn is that, you know, anyone can be conservative at the end of the day. So it's not entirely about that.
Mm-hmm. The two are not necessarily like...
Yeah.
Sorry, like I think there's definitely like from the sources you spoke to, like who work like on the National Post team or just like, you know, in kind of like more conservative media spaces, I think they definitely like, as you say, like there's a shift required mentally, like in terms of like what you view, like what is the movement trying to accomplish? Because, you know, for them, it's more so about like assimilating. So I guess if you can kind of like shift your mindset in that sense and like be like, but it also, it kind of goes deeper than that. It's like, if you don't directly come from like a marginalized community within the LGBT community, you know, it's harder for you to like understand the need for like perhaps like radicalism.
Mm-hmm.
Well, on that note, Matthew, I just want to say thank you for being here today and speaking with me on your piece.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. I mean, I don't know if we have any listeners here who are, you know, not directly like, you know, from within the TMU community or TMU students, but if you are outside of the university's confines, please give Matthew's piece a read. You will not regret it. And yeah, it's a passion project for how long in the making? How long was it that you spent working on this, Matthew?
A year.
A year. So there you go. So you know it's going to be good and very well. Like, yeah, please give it a read. Anyway, thanks. Thanks, guys, for tuning in today, and have a great rest of your week.
I'm your host, Evan Zeller. This episode was produced by me and Chloe Kim. If you enjoyed this episode, explore all of our podcasts in the podcast tab at reviewofjournalism.ca. Thanks for listening.